Hello, I'm Tiffany Proffitt with Urgent Care Wrap, and today we're reviewing techniques that you use every day. We're talking digital blocks. We're joined today by your resident pragmatist, Dr. Braden Johnson, who's going to help us review digital block basics and perhaps learn a new method that wasn't traditionally taught. Now, Dr. Johnson, what's the worst injury you've ever had to a finger or toe?
Me personally was probably when I had a newborn and they were sleeping in the car and I was trying to close the door so quietly and I just completely slammed my own finger in the door. And to add insult to injury, I had to trephinate my nail and I didn't do a block on myself and that hurt maybe just as bad.
Oh, that sounds miserable. It's the baby hurt locker.
Have you ever had a bad injury to your finger?
So I have been fortunate, but I grew up in the Midwest and I trained in rural Michigan. So pretty much all day long, all I had were farmers, construction workers who'd come in with just these gnarly macerated hands and fingers. And they never wanted to be sedated. So they just say, hey, just fix me up so I can get back to work.
You know, maybe the craziest finger injury I ever saw was a farmer that, you know, this is going to be bad, by the way, the farmer seeing me, who comes
it's
in.
Always bad when the farmers come in.
he comes in with a partial amputation of his middle finger at the PIP joint. He had been out hunting with his favorite hunting dog. The dog was out chasing birds, got overheated, came back to him, probably had a heat stroke and seized. The guy reaches down to try and calm his dog. The dog bites his finger off, swallows it, and dies. And so the guy comes in missing half of his finger, but he's just so distraught that he just lost his dog and was kind of like, just clean up my finger, let me go home.
Just imagine hand surgery. Can you actually just cut the finger out of that dog's stomach? I really want to do this micro surgery here and reattach the nerves and the vessels.
Oh, that would be amazing.
So why don't we just dive right in? Just tell us about these digital blocks.
Well, so a personally relevant topic then, digital blocks are something that's going to make your patients happy and calm, that you can actually figure out what's going on with their finger, their toe, and probably something that you can utilize even better than you realize now.
So what are some procedures that you can use this for?
You know, simple ones would be like a nail trephination or a nail removal like we talked about, or maybe a laceration repair on a digit, even if they've got a fracture or dislocation or both. And then maybe even as simple as like a paronychia or a felon if you were going to do an IND.
Man, that's a lot of procedures and injuries. Now, can you use that on toes or is this like a finger-specific block?
I mean, aren't toes just like little fingers of the feet? So I would say yes. It might be a little bit harder to get them numb. It might take a couple more minutes to kick in, but in general, yeah.
Gotcha. Perfect. You mind walking us through what stuff do I need and how do I set this up?
Well, like all things, you're going to need a little personal protective equipment, at least a pair of gloves. You'll need some local, 1 to 2% lidocaine or maybe bupivacaine, 0.25 or 0.5%. You'll need a syringe, 5 to 10 mil syringe with a drawing needle and then a small needle, like a 27 to 30 gauge needle that's probably an inch or an inch and a half long. And then some cleaning agents, so chlorhexidine, alcohol swab, iodine, those kinds of things.
Gotcha. So really, you don't need that much. I mean, you need some needles, syringe, gloves for yourself, obviously your anesthetic, and then a cleansing agent, and you're done. Really simple, easy. Now, in terms of the anesthetics, does one last longer than the other? And would you recommend one over the other? For example, you're talking about paronychia, which takes maybe a couple seconds to drain, versus nail removal, nail bed repair, which could take 30 minutes or, in my luck, 45 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, they all will work, and they probably all work long enough for what you need. But, you know, with lidocaine, you're probably talking about 1 to 3 hours of relief. Bupivacaine, you might get more like 6 to 8 hours. If I can take my choice, I use bupivacaine pretty much every time when it's available, just because I know it's going to last a lot longer than I need it to.
All right. So I'd agree. The way you laid it out, bupivacaine seems the best option. I mean, who wouldn't want to be 8 hours pain-free? So why don't you walk us through these two common digital block techniques?
Yeah, so these are referred to as the traditional and the transthecal technique. So I personally use the transthecal technique, which is where you're going to be injecting just one time versus the traditional technique, which is typically two separate injections.
Is one really better than the other, transthecal versus traditional?
No, not really. I mean, there's literature back in the 1990s that says they are equal in efficacy, but patients just report less pain with the single injection. So ultimately, it's the clinician preference. I would say if you're working on a thumb or a big toe, maybe use the traditional technique just so you do the procedure once.
Now, let's say you're on shift, you've got a 23-year-old male, and he got his hand caught in a table saw. The index and middle finger are lacerated. You know you're going to need a block. Now, how do you set them up?
Well, first of all, were you looking over my shoulder on my last shift?
I might have been creepily stalking you.
So in this case, I'd do the transthecal technique for that index finger. So what I would do is take the patient's hand. They're going to place it palm side towards the ceiling, and you're going to look for that crease that's at that first MCP. So that's going to be the target area for the transthecal technique, whether you're talking the second, third, fourth, fifth digits. It's a little tricky on the thumb. That doesn't always work. We can talk about that a bit later. So you're going to take your skin prep agent. You're going to prep the area. You're going to have drawn up about 5 milliliters of your anesthetic. You're going to take that 27 to 30 gauge needle, and you're actually going to put that 90 degrees to the hand on that crease, and you're going to basically push down until you get to the bone. It's a pretty short distance, but that's how you know you're going to be in the right place. So needle down to bone, and then what you're going to do is withdraw that needle like 2 or 3 millimeters, and you're going to direct it just a bit more towards the finger. So now it's more like maybe 60, 45 degrees instead of 90. At that point, you're actually going to depress your plunger, and you're going to try to inject between 2 and 5 milliliters of your local into that finger. In theory, what's going to happen is you're going to fill that tendon sheath and catch all 4 nerves in one injection. And in about 5 minutes, that patient's going to be numb from the injection point down to the tip of their finger.
Okay, so I've got my patient. We've got all our supplies, palm up to the ceiling. We cleansed it, and it's just one injection down to bone and then angle so that you're filling up that tendon sheath after you've drawn back a little bit. I got a fangirl here. The transthecal is my favorite technique too. And for everyone listening, this is completely in your wheelhouse and scope of practice. Now, I know some of you get worried because you're thinking, oh my God, I'm hitting the flexor tendon. And you're worried you're going to cause a flexor tendinitis or damage the tendon. We just want to tell you, don't be worried. As long as you're cleansing the skin appropriately, there is a low risk to any infection, and there's a real low risk that you're going to damage that tendon whatsoever. So please don't let this deter you. But if you're still a little concerned, not feeling completely comfortable, we've got another technique just for you.
So if you're worried, or let's say you're talking about a big toe or a thumb that you're just not sure you're going to be able to get numb, or maybe you're talking about a very proximal part on the dorsal aspect of the hand, then you can go with the traditional technique. So as opposed to having the patient's palm side towards the ceiling, it's going to be, you know, palm down. And then you're going to take your same needle and anesthetic that you did on the transthecal, but this time you're going to prep the skin in the same place, just distal to the MCP. And then you're going to be doing 2 separate injections laterally to that spot. So you're going to insert your needle just lateral of midline. You're going to advance that till you're past the bone. You're going to inject a couple milliliters of your solution while you're withdrawing, and then you're going to repeat on the opposite side of the finger so that you're catching all 4 nerves in 2 separate injections with roughly the same volume as before, you know, anywhere from 2 to 5 milliliters total.
Okay. So if I'm getting this right, we've got our patient, hand saw, table saw to fingers. For the transthecal technique, it's really just one injection onto the palm of the hand, kind of at that first finger knuckle, really, when you think about it. And this is going to fill up that tendon sheath. Versus the traditional technique, you pancake flip the hand. So you got the back of the hand to the ceiling, and you're doing multiple injections kind of on the side and all around the hand to get all those digital nerves.
That's right.
Now, Dr. Johnson, what happens if, like my department, you're experiencing a lidocaine shortage and all of your anesthetics have epinephrine? I mean, are my patient's fingers just going to shrivel off and fall off and necrose?
No, I promise that they won't. You can go ahead and use whatever agent you have, even if it has epinephrine. this is actually a myth that's been busted for quite some time, but you know how these things are. They just, they linger and linger and linger. So they've actually studied this for nearly 30 years. There's never been a single case found of necrosis associated with epinephrine use. And in fact, using epinephrine probably will make your block last longer and may give you less blood in your field for your repair. So for instance, if I'm actually doing a pretty extensive repair, like I need to ronger some bone down, I'm generally using an agent with epinephrine in it, along with doing something like a tourniquet as well.
That's a relief. So if I want my block, so I've got bupivacaine that by itself can last up to 8 hours, and I add epi, it's going to last longer and make it easier for me to repair?
Oh, yeah.
Perfect. And I know, like you were saying, I did kind of look a little bit into some of those studies. It looked like those papers with the necrosis, like you said, were early 20th century or early 1900s for the young ones out there. And most cases, they didn't standardize any of the mixing or preparation of that anesthetic with epi. Sometimes they were using the good old cocaine, which you used to have in the department in liquid form. Sometimes you still can find it. And overall, they used way too much anesthetic. So if you're following Dr. Johnson's protocols and you're not using 20 cc's of this bupivacaine or lidocaine with epi in that finger or toe, you're probably going to be fine. There's really low risk of digital necrosis or ischemia. But I do have to say, just in case one of our listeners out there has a patient who gets that rare complication of that epinephrine injection, I want them to remember phentolamine. Phentolamine is your reversal agent. And the nice thing is it's just a little local infiltration of that 0.5% phentolamine at the puncture site, and it will resolve the ischemia almost immediately.
Nice.
All right. So it looks like we've debunked this necrosis myth, and it looks like we've got our patient already. He's all blocked. We're getting our suture prepared. I got to stop and think. Are there any problems that I'm going to see from this digital block?
You know, the pragmatic answer to this is that basically no. You know, I do an informed consent for these kind of procedures with my patients. And really, all I'm telling them about is that they've got risk of bleeding, pain from the procedure, and then avoiding infection. You know, we mentioned earlier, could you maybe damage a structure with a needle or put it into a vascular structure? I mean, maybe. But we're talking about tiny needles, small volumes of anesthetics. It doesn't matter if you hit something like that. It doesn't matter if you inject that whole volume into some little arterial, if you're somehow that good at finding it. But it won't make any difference, so it shouldn't stop you from doing the procedure.
Yeah, just remind everyone, this is not the trauma protocol, massive 14-gauge hose needles. These are really, really small. You're going to get teeny drops at a time out of them. So we've got our patient, came in with the LAC, we chose our technique, we consented the patient, we cleaned them appropriately, we injected our anesthetic, and we've repaired them. Done. Beautiful. Is there ever a patient who comes in with a finger injury where you think, maybe I shouldn't block this?
You know, the one case when you probably ought to at least consider whether to skip it would be somebody who seems to have an obvious flexor tenosynovitis. We talked about how causing flexor tenosynovitis is nearly impossible if you do this right, but your referring ortho or hand specialist may be a little irked if they find out that you already did a block on that patient before they had a chance to examine them. So typically I would have that phone conversation before I would do a potential procedure there just for pain relief, because they may say, no, I want to see them before, and then we'll take care of the anesthesia afterward.
So if there's like clear signs of infection, if it's all red and swollen and warm and you maybe have pus coming out of it, probably a good thing to just stand back and call the specialist.
I think of it almost like if you're going to tap a knee, if you think that that patient has cellulitis overlying a low-risk septic joint, I usually say, I'm not going to stick a needle through this infected area into a non-infected area. That's how I think you should think of it.
But if someone comes in and they've got a LAC or a fracture or partial amputation, is this okay to go ahead?
Oh, go for it. Absolutely.
Well, thank you again, Dr. Johnson. Can you run us through just some quick highlights, some quick take-home points before we close it out today?
First, when you use your digital block correctly, you're going to give your patients a painless experience for laceration repairs, dislocations, INDs, and nail bed injuries. Second, single injections via the transthecal technique work just as well and cause less pain for patients and are really good for that second through fifth digit. Third, consider the traditional technique if you're dealing with thumbs, big toes, and if you need to numb that proximal dorsal aspect of the digit. Fourth, it's safe to use epinephrine-containing products, whether you have that option to use them or you just want to have it last longer. And last, maybe avoid the contraindication of injecting a suspected flexor tendon synovitis. Leave that up to the hand specialist.
Awesome. That was a great review of digital blocks. I am so prepared for my next farmer, cat bite, construction worker to come in, walk through that door. Thank you, Dr. Johnson, for joining me today, and we're looking forward to having you back for more tips.
Can't wait.